One is in Malachim Bet, chapter 12. I'm going to read that first. And the other one is Divrei Hayamim, which has a parallel story, which fills in all kinds of details. So first let's take a look at the story in Malachim, and I think we'll be immediately able to see that there's some suppression of information, but there's just not enough information to be able to make an assessment. So let's, there are hints, but there's not enough information. Then when we read Divrei Hayamim, and we'll see that there's a lot going on. So I'm going to kind of scan through it pretty quickly, because I guess the point of the shiur is this is another one of those lessons where I show you the difference between Yirmiyahu's version of things in Sefer Malachim and Ezra's version of things when he came back from the Second Temple and he had his own responsibility of building a temple. So it was a much more, don't forget, and it's something I've mentioned before, but it's been a while, so I should repeat mentioning, I should certainly repeat it. Yirmiyahu is dealing with a world where there is no Beit HaMikdash. He has other things on his mind. Ezra is dealing with an issue where he's built the second Beit HaMikdash, but nobody is coming. Or some people are coming, but not enough. There's all that chapter 7 of Sefer Ezra, if you're curious, take a look. So he just has different messages. When he's recounting the story, he's got different things that he wants to emphasize. So that's too much of a setup. Let's go to chapter 12. Halfway through verse 1 is the death of Ataliah, and then it says, Ben Sheva Shanim Yosh Malko, starting in verse 2. Bishnat Sheva Yehu Melech Yoash, it was the seventh year of Yehu, which makes sense because Yehoash is also 7 years old for a very simple reason. Ataliah ruled for 7 years. Ataliah started her rule at the same time that Yehu had everybody else killed. So essentially that's how you could synchronize the kings back. It's nice, actually. It lets you sort of catch your breath, because a lot of times it's hard to match up all the kings because they're so out of sequence. But Yehu and Ataliah start exactly at the same time, because Yehu kills everybody on his side. Ataliah offs everybody on her side, and they both start at the same time. It allows you to resynchronize what's going on. So Yehu, Yehoash is 7 years old. V'arba'im shana malach b'yishlaim. So he ruled for 40 years. Which is good news and bad news. The good news is a 40-year rule is a wonderful, terrific rule. On the other hand, he died at 47, which is not a great age
so
to die at.
So he started to rule when he was seven years old.
And one suspects that he was not completely in control of, I doubt very much that he was completely in control of, the question is who was in control, and that the answer shouldn't surprise you. We'll find out in a second.
Was he murdered?
He was murdered in the end. Yeah, he was murdered. We'll see. This is one of, there are very few assassinations in the line of David. In the line of Ephraim up to the north, they get assassinated like flies off the wall. But Yehuda, I believe there are 3 assassinations, and that's it, maybe 2. Yehoash, and there's definitely one other one, but there aren't many assassinations. V'shemi mo Tzivya mi Be'er Sheva. So she had a nice Jew. His mother was a nice Jewish girl. Nice Tzivya from Be'er Sheva. V'yas Yehoash ha'yashar b'nei Hashem. They haven't heard this in a long time. He did what was right and just in the eyes of the Lord. Kol yamav asher horahu, which were instructed to him by Yehoyada HaKohen. So here is the power behind the throne. First of all, here's the power behind the throne, because he's the one who saved Yehoash in the first place. He re-enthroned Yehoash, and it wouldn't be a surprise if he took the rule. And there's a hint here, by the way. Now, Vayash Yoash Hayashar Ben Hashem Kol Yamav, he did good all of his days, Asher Horahu Yehoyada Kohen, as Yehoyada had instructed him. There's a little sense of something going on. I don't know if do you get what the hint is here, by the way?
Yeah, that when Yehoyada was gone.
Exactly right. Then
right.
There was, that's
Cohen
exactly
was,
right.
Was behind the scenes. He was running the show.
That's correct, for a while. The question is when does he take over? We'll get a sense of when he takes over. There's tension between Yehoyada, I think, and between Yehoash. One gets the sense from this pasuk that things were going well as long as Yehoyada, the firm Kohen, was around. When he wasn't, things went to pot. You won't discover any of that here in Sefer Malachim. Mm-hmm. We'd have to go to Divrei Hayamim to find out exactly what was going on. The only thing that bothers Yirmiyahu is that he allowed people to continue their private worship on the Bamot, which is they worship Hashem, but they did not have to come to Yerushalayim, which was, of course, against the law, because once you have Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to have private altars. But on the level of sins, it's not, you know, if you have Baal, which is like a 10, and Egel Zahav, which is like a 7, so Bamot are probably like a 3 or a 4 with a good 0, or maybe I did it backwards, but, the number one choice would be coming to Yerushalayim. So the Bamot are not the worst thing in the world, and one gets that sense, but it certainly was not good. Hashem, absolutely. They were dedicated to Hashem. They were at people absolutely. The motivation generally is, And they were probably being serviced by Kohanim, probably some Kohanim who didn't feel like going up to Yerushalayim, and they probably supported, although you didn't really need a Kohen for a Bama, so it's not. So maybe there were no Kohanim. No, these were persons who worshipped Hashem, but they didn't want to make the long trek to Yerushalayim. They'd rather make their own little shul. There was probably some economic benefit in it. Second of all, who wants to schlep all the way to Yerushalayim, which is quite the trek, when I could make a korban in my backyard? It's like shtiebels. You know, why should I walk to the big shul when I got a shtiebel right next to it? Generally speaking, the word Bama, generally, but not always, Bama usually refers to worship of Hashem. Even though it's translated as high places, it means Hashem. When you have Baal, usually it's Mizbeach, altar. Usually when it's a Avodah Zarah, it's Mizbeach. So essentially you have the kosher Mizbeach, so Yerushalayim. You have the ones that are to Baal, those are also called Mizbeach or Matzevah. And Bama is 90% of the time talking about worship to Hashem. There are occasions when a Bama is used for to indicate Baal worship, but it's rare. It is rare. Can you think of a certain place that you saw, or do you have a place in mind, or are you just thinking that's what you remember based on learning?
I only read the English passage.
Oh, yeah. So maybe
it's translated as high places earlier, you know, when we were talking about Jezebel, but it was probably I don't know what.
But it might have been. It might have been. Oh, this may have been those times that it was called a Bama, but it is more rare. Vayomer Yoash al Kohanim, call it Kesef Kodeshim. So all of a sudden, he has, with no real stop, it just goes right into a terrific thing that he does, which is he decides to refurbish the Beit HaMikdash. So what does he say? He goes to the Kohanim, he says, call Kesef Kodeshim, all the holy money, that is money that people say that they want to dedicate to God, Asher Yuvah Beit Hashem. And now he describes what kind of kesef. Kesef over, that's over ha-pkudim, that means the chatzi ha-shekel, shema chatzi ha-shekel. Ish kesef nashot erko, that's the end of Vayikra, where it says if a person dedicates himself, then he could pay off a certain price, and a 60-year-old person, a 50-year-old person, a girl or a boy, everybody has a different price. So if they say, I want to give my body, so to speak, or my very self to the Beit HaMikdash, so what they actually meant was a certain value, which was decided by in Sefer Vayikra. Kol kesef asher yaleh alevish, or anybody just want to say, I got $100, I'd like to give this to charity, to Hashem. Lahavi beit Hashem, yikhu lahem ha-kohanim, I want you kohanim to take it. Ish meit makaro, take from the person who you know. That is what happens, everybody had a favorite kohen. I want to donate money to kohanic use. And the kohanic use, he could use it more or less for his own benefit within the service of the Beit HaMikdash. Vehem yichazku et bedek abayit, you're going to take all that money, and you, Kohanim, are not going to have it essentially for yourselves or for anything else, for nothing except for fixing up bedek abayit. Bedek means probably the cracks or the infirm places from the word bedika, places where you have to check to see that it's okay. Today it's used bedek abayit. I'm not, how would people, it's a very common phrase now. I'm giving money to bedek abayit. I think it's used for maintenance, right? Upkeep, and that's probably right. Although what?
Prepared
to deterioration. Deterioration, the word bedek indicates that there is an actual deterioration. A lot of times you hear it used today as just, I want to buy a new Sefer Torah, so that would be called bedek abayit. But that's not really what it means. It really means when there are cracks and fill in the holes and call the plumber and stuff like that. That's a bedek abayit situation. L'chol asher yimatzei sham bedek. Wherever there is a bedek, a deterioration, they're going to give money. Now there's a break, and it says, Vayihi b'shnat esrim v'shalosh shana l'melech Yoash. It's now the 23rd year of his rule. He's 30 years old. Lo chizku ha-kohanim et bedek abayit. They did not improve the bedek abayit. So there are two ways to understand this, which is that they never did, that they've been essentially holding on to the money, putting it in a nice savings and loan and getting, I don't know, 2%, but they simply have not applied to the house, and therefore it's getting more and more deteriorated. The other possibility is that they did it good for 22 years, or however, it's hard to say when he started. I doubt he started when he was 7 years old. Well, let's say he got religion at 20. So for 9 years, they took the money and they put it towards refabrication. But this year, the money did not go, perhaps the Kohanim, we don't even know why. We don't know exactly why the Kohanim did not do bedek abayit. According to Radak, Radak tries to learn schud on the Kohanim. He doesn't want to find fault with the Kohanim. What is it? He says that Kohanim figured they'd save it, and when they collected enough money to really do the job, you don't have to build things, you know, year after year. You collect a little money, and then in every 3 or 4 years, you know, you do the work that was done. So he really, Radak wants to understand that there's a good thing going on here. So it's not clear to me whether bedek abayit was never done, or whether Bedek Abayit was done up to the 23rd year, and then in the 23rd year it stopped. Do you have a translation that prefers one or the other? I don't have a translation here, so I don't know.
What, for Bedek?
No, for the idea in verse 7,
is there a sense that
they never did Bedek Abayit at this?
Yes, the Kohanim did not repair the deterioration.
Wait, I got different. It was just the 20th year.
That's what it says.
How does it?
But it happened in the 23rd year.
That, go ahead, finish the sentence.
Right. That the priest had not repaired the features of the house.
Had not.
So it's still a little unclear whether it was never or just.
But here it says the Kohanim did not repair the deterioration of the temple.
Read the first half of the verse.
Read the first half of the verse.
The question is, was it?
It was in the 23rd year of King Joash, the Kohanim did not repair the deterioration of the temple.
Yeah, it's also unclear. I mean, the English is not making it any more clear. Well, let me take a look at the Mefarshim and see what I could do here. What verse are we? Seven, right?
Seven.
Zion? Okay, hold on a second.
Yeah, but the thing is, it doesn't tell us when he said this to Yahweh.
Yeah, we don't know how
so
many years it's been. It must be a few. There's got to be a few years at least, because it seems to be a surprise what's going on in the 23rd year. I don't know how many. I would guess 10 from 20 to 30 years old. I don't know. I'm going to look at Rashi just a second. Let's see what Rashi says. Nothing. Radak says, Radak doesn't say. He just says that the Kohanim, that the Melech suspected them of pocketing the money when in fact they weren't. They were just sort of, you know, they figured they'd hold on to it for a year or two and then wait for the,
yeah,
you know, the holes to get really big. It's like my driveway. I'm waiting until it completely falls apart before I go and call up somebody to repave it. The Malbim says, yeah, the Malbim says, Az ra'ash akonim lo chizku et beit Hashem. Then he noticed. So according to the Malbim, it was simply that he just wasn't paying attention to what was going on in the Beit HaMikdash. And then I guess maybe he was on a tour in the 23rd year. And again, we don't know how many years are going on. 10, 5, 6, certainly not 23. I don't think he started this whole action at 7 years old. But according to the Malbim, essentially they had pocketed the money for X number of years, period, and not given the money over to the Beit HaMikdash, which means that it was still in disrepair. I don't know which way the pasuk is correct, but I think both are possible, although it does change a little bit of motivation. Why would the Kohanim be, I mean, if the Kohanim were doing it this year, that year, and there was just one year they didn't do it, the question is, should the Melech then be more suspicious or less suspicious? That's the question.
Well, I think you can infer from what he says that from now on we're changing the operation, that he suspect that they were using it for their own benefit.
So you're saying that therefore it must have been they made sure to do Bedek Abayit every single year, and by the fact that they deviated from the norm and didn't give Bedek Abayit, so that's why he suspected them. Is that?
Yeah, he said, you know, the system you're using is no good. We've got to change it.
But it's possible.
So it means that they're not doing anything.
Okay. Pasuk Chet. Vayikra Melech Yoash Yodah Kohen. He calls to the Kohen Gadol. So how come you're not increasing the... do you have a comment there, by the way?
Well, it says the priests were waiting for the money to accumulate.
That's Radak.
They did not have to take money out of their own pockets to repair the temple.
And the king.
Yoash, however, suspected them of taking the money for themselves and to collect them to fulfill their part.
Right, that's Radak. That's Radak. Which is very possible, although it also doesn't really... You don't know for sure whether it was just 1 year or X number of years more.
No, the breaches were made by Italians.
Ah, okay.
So they existed for a long time.
Correct. You are right. So therefore, if that's the Bedek that they're talking about, it's not clear. The Chazal say, there is that opinion in Chazal that the breaches that they were talking about was specifically stuff that was done by Italia's sons, and therefore it was a one-time fix. However, I think it's also possible the sense of Bedek Abayit is called just general disrepair. The Beit HaMikdash is 155 years old. So you're right. If we go with the Chazal's opinion that they were specifically trying to fix damage that was created by Italia, that means they had never fixed it up. And then all you have to try to figure out is how come Yoash took how come it took him to his 23rd year to figure out that nobody was doing anything with the cash. And where was the cash going, by the way? Because we're going to see in a second, they don't have cash. They have to now start a new collection. So was that mean the Kohanim were refusing to listen to the king? They told him to do one thing and they refused to listen to him? That creates a real sense of tension, which, I don't know what the answer is here. I think there are multiple possibilities. There's certainly some tension between the king and the Kohen, The question is, who's in the right, who's doing their job, and who's not doing their job. If it's true that it was a one-time fix, and it's already in the 23rd year, when Radak says the Kohanim figured they'd save the money, that seems to be a long time to save the money. When the king tells you to go fix something, and you wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait, it sounds like somebody who, what's it called, who saves and saves forever to spend something nice and never gets to enjoy it.
That's a good question you bring up. Why doesn't he make them account for the money? You don't see that anywhere.
You are correct. He does not make them account.
The assumption is
they use the money for standard priestly services, buying containers, whatever was used in the Kohen, doing whatever they wanted to do with it. Vayeyotu pasuktet. So Pasuk Chet says, how come you're not doing it? You're supposed to, I'm sorry, I'll read it. Vayikra melke oashu yorada kohen lekohanim vayomar lehem madu einchem achazkim tetar bayi vata al tekhu kesem beit makarehem. Stop taking money from people who know you, who are giving directly to the Kohanim to use the money at their own discretion. Because at the time, he told them to go take money from their people that knew them, and then redirect the money to the Bedek Abayit. But the money didn't go to the Bedek Abayit. It was going into whatever the Kohen felt was the best. They were like in charge of finance. So he says, listen, stop taking from your friends. I see that's not working out at all. So I got a better idea. We'll see what he says. What you did is you're doing the wrong thing because they gave you the money. I told you they gave you the money specifically for Bedek Abayit. Vayeyotu HaKohanim, and the Kohanim decided, they...
What's the root of that word?
Very good. Avat, Aleph, Vav, Tuf, which is close to Aleph, Vav, He, or Iva, Lemoshav, Lo, to want. He desired it. Aleph, Vav, Tuf, but it only shows up in the Nifal and in the Piel. You never have the word Oth by itself, the Kal. You know where it shows up? In Shechem, when Yaakov says, if you go and have a circumcision, or actually son said, if you go have a circumcision, az yeyotu lachem lanu, then you will be acceptable or desirable or wanted by us. So it's a very funny, it has essentially three soft letters, Aleph, Vav, and He, although here it's more of a Tuf than a He, but as you know, the Tuf and the He are both feminine endings, so they mix up a lot, both in Hebrew and Arabic. So you get a word that really, it sort of falls, this is one of those words that the French had so much problems with that it took the Spanish to tell them what was going on with the word. Shechora ani v'na'ava v'not Yerushalayim. I am black, but I am beautiful, which means I am desirable, says the woman from Shir HaShirim. So vayetu HaKohanim, the Kohanim decided, but look what they decided, it's very strange. Livoti k'chad kesem me'etam. They said, we're not taking any more money from the nation. I think the reason why they're not taking money from the nation is because they're afraid that the king could suspect them of misusing the money. They're not going to take the money, and therefore, we're not going to take any money. We Kohanim are on strike, essentially. We're not going to take any volunteer money because you're suspecting us. I think that's what's going on.
That's
but
not
now
what
you
it
have.
Says.
What?
That's not what the English says.
Well, what does the English say?
The English says, and the king called for Jehoiada, the priest, and the other priest.
Yeah, the next. But what about verse 9?
Wait. Why do you not repair the breach of the house? Now, therefore, receive no more money of your acquaintances. It was the king's idea.
Yep, keep going.
But deliver for the breaches of the house.
Right,
they
next
pasuk. And they consented to do that.
That's
they
correct, paid. But then look at the next, and then read the rest of the book. They consented and to do what? Says,
receive no more money from the people, nor to repair the breaches of the house,
that
someone else would do it.
Nobody was doing it. They weren't taking money at all.
Well, yeah, but he made this chest. All the money went into the chest.
That's what's going to happen afterwards because they got a problem. The Kohanim, I think what's going on is the Kohanim refused to take money. But if they won't take any money,
agreed.
What?
The consent agreement.
What is that?
It's a court decision. We're going to back off. Consent agreement.
Yeah. Correct, and therefore.
We're backing off.
We're just not, and therefore the Bedek Abayit is not going to get built.
Job.
That's right, exactly right. Yeah. If you're going to suspect, according to Radak, if you're going to suspect us of not doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. We're out of here. Again, there's a tension. I think there's a tension between the king and the Kohanim, although it's a very light tension. You don't get the full force of it. Although it's interesting, he calls Yehoyada and the Kohanim. You follow? That's a very interesting point. Yehoyada is the Kohen Gadol. You want something done, you talk to Yehoyada, he'll talk to Kohanim. No, he calls the Yehoyada and the Kohanim. Again, you get a little sense of tension between the king and the priesthood. And maybe the tension is created because, keep in mind, who was probably in charge of the whole government for the first 5-10 years? It was probably the priesthood until he became a boy, he certainly wasn't running things 7 years old. Yehoyada was certainly in command. There's no queen mom. Sibya, we never hear about. She's theoretically the queen mom, but I don't know, she seems like a nice, shy girl from Beersheba, so we don't know exactly what's going on. So one gets a sense that perhaps there's a reason for the tension between the Malchut and the Kahuna.
Atalia might have killed her, too.
What?
Atalia might have killed her, too.
Might have. It's hard to say. You're right. She may not have been around.
Just one comment, I guess.
Sure, please.
So basically, like, in the beginning of the parak, it seemed like Yerushalayim wasn't that imperative to the service of Hashem.
Because he let people do work in their own place.
The
go ahead.
But here, it seems like, you know, he's cracking down on all the faults of Yerushalayim. It seems like contradictory. Like, on one hand...
Well, of the temple specifically.
Yeah, on one hand, he doesn't care about the temple. On one hand, he's putting in all this money. There has to be some kind of added significance to Baba.
That's a good point. What I could try is the other way, and try to give Yoash a little bit of a boost. I could say that maybe he was trying to improve the Beit HaMikdash
so that people
would actually come. Maybe he thought it was a good selling point for people to stop putting down the Baba. Now, again, we're not told that. We're not told that. We'd have to just estimate on, and you're right, maybe there is a connection, maybe there isn't, because it slides right from the Bamot into the Beit HaMikdash, saying that there maybe is a connection. But it's hard to, there's so little information here. Yirmiyahu is being very terse. Very, very terse. Anyway, I'll continue on. So essentially they're on strike to a certain degree for taking money. So what happens? Now it sounds like it's Yoyada's idea to take this money chest. But we'll see, it's not. It's the king's idea. So he takes an aron, a pushka. This is. By the way, if you're wondering about your source for a pushka, this is the source for a pushka. As far as I know, it doesn't show anywhere else in Tanakh. They take an aron, a box, a large box. They carve a hole into it. So they put it next to the altar. So that way, every time a Jew showed up in the mizbeach, he would drop a little money into the pushka. And then the other money, apparently the Kohanim decided, these Shomrei Asaf, which means they are the guys in charge, no, Shomrei Asaf are actually people in charge of logistics, probably they're in charge of the money. So what they're doing is they're taking the extra money, and apparently this is such a great idea, everybody's excited about it, just it takes away all the stress, just put all the money into the pushka. When they saw that it was really big, Vayal Sofer HaMelech, so two guys came, which is, by the way, is also the halacha. I don't know if this is the source of the halacha, but there is a halacha that not, no one person can take care of the pushka. You have to...
Here.
What? Oh, is that the source for it? Oh, that's very interesting. So here's another example of two people specifically getting involved in it. Vayal... What?
Yeah,
as it should. I have to tell you...
I know it was
at a closed circuit TV.
Similar in Rabbi Kron until Spindler went away.
I can tell you, Kushner doesn't. Kushner has one person. I complained about it because that is with the kids. That is not. I don't know who takes care of the money in the end, but the kids take care of the pushka themselves, and they go and they empty the money from one place to the other. And it's actually not teaching them the best thing. It should, because not on one hand you trust the kids. I'm sure that no kid is ever stealing from. I'm sure no kid is ever stealing. But it creates a certain temptation. And why? And I can tell you, when I was a banker, a teller, two people counted the money that went back in. At the end of the day, the money that goes back into the vault, always two people, one manager, one teller. It was never ever one person, because the idea one person could collude, but two people, while theoretically you can collude, it's much less likely to collude with two people. And that was the law at the bank that I was used.
What? No one person can't collude.
I meant steal. Thank you very much. Another example of my lack of control of the evil language. Okay.
Right.
So the melech's, so again, here's a little bit of tension. Who goes? One guy representing the king, the sofer of the melech, who's counting. Kohen Agadol, who's not named here. I wonder who this is, by the way. Why not call him Yehoyada? It's very strange. Vayatsuru comes from the word tsror, which means they tied it up in a loop because money had holes in the middle, and they would tie the money together. That's where it comes, tsror. Vayimnu etakesef, they count the money. Hanimsa beit Hashem. So they got two people watching the money. One is the king's guy, one's the Kohen guy. Again, you have this very subtle tension going on.
See,
what?
Republicans,
go ahead.
Here it says there's no reference to the tying the coins together, but it's tied in bags.
Oh,
in this translation.
It never says the word bags, by the way. It just says Vayatsuru in the Hebrew.
Here they.
It could be they use bags also. That's possible.
No, here it says they bagged and counted the money.
So they translate the word Vayatsuru as bagged. It's Vayatsuru. What happens is that it's a difficult word because it loses a resh. Vayatsuru. Most Hebrew words, when they have a double word at the end, for instance, livavot, your hearts, livavachem, but sometimes it's libachem, right? Sometimes it's, or
it should be a dagesh.
Oh, but a resh can't take a dagesh. A resh can't take a dagesh. Almost never. Three times, I think, in all of Tanakh, a resh takes it. It's not a groni letter, which absolutely can't take a dagesh, but it's treated like a groni, right? It is a guttural. It's a close to guttural. And therefore can't take the resh. So you don't know what's wrong. How do you say mountain? Har. But what's the original word? Harare kedem. You follow? So that's where you get this lost letter, and then all of grammar, it drives people crazy, because you don't know what to deal with the word. Because you just can't see the letter that drops off. So this is a case where it's really sroar. That's probably the best thing. Now, it could have been
done on purpose.
What?
So there's multiple interpretations of the word.
I don't know about that. I don't think there's intentional ambiguity. It's just the nature of the language. And let me tell you something. There's some words like vayazimu, which I don't want to get into that right now, but there are words that drive you crazy. It's hard to understand what's going on unless you put on that extra... If you don't put on the extra letter, if you don't realize the extra letter's there, you can drive yourself crazy trying to figure out what the word is if you put the last letter on, so it becomes very clear. Anyway, v'natnu et hakesef ha-mitukan. They took the measured money, or the that's mitukan means measured, tachan. Al yideu se'am lacha ha-mufkadim beit Hashem. So they measured out the money to the people who were in charge of the cash. V'yotziu l'chorshei ha'etz v'lonim ha'osei beit Hashem. And they doled it out. They hired contractors. V'l'godrim and to fencers, v'l'chotzei evan and to stone cutters, v'l'knot etzim to buy wood, v'avnei machzev to buy stone, v'chazek ebedek Hashem, v'l'chol asher yetzei al abayit l'chozka. Everything that required building the house, they spent the money, so now they started going through the business. Ach lo yeyaseh beit Hashem sipot kesef, mizamarot, mizrikot, chatzotzrot, uklei zahav, uklei kesef, and akesef v'av beit Hashem. However, they didn't make any of the kelim. It was all done for the house, but it didn't go to purchase new kelim. Why is that important? I don't know, but I wonder if that's also a little bit of a shock to the Kohanim, because the Kohanim were really, it's the Kohanim don't care whether there's a hole in the floor. What they care about is that they have chatzotzrot that they could play, that they have trumpets. There's something a little weird going on here, but I'm not entirely sure. Kilosei hamlacha yitnu. They gave them to the workers. The chizku bo beit Hashem. They did the job. V'lo yachashvu et anashim asher yitnu hakesh v'yadam. They didn't even take receipts. Gave him $100, give me $100 of wood, there was no receipts, there was no nothing. It was all cash business, and everybody trusts everybody. And there's no insult here, by the way. The pasuk just takes it actually as a compliment. Latet lo seam lacha, they gave them workers, kibinem aho hemosim. People did the work honestly and truthfully, which is a compliment. So that's a good thing. The people were feeling pretty good. They were given $100, they did $100 worth of work. They didn't pocket the money, didn't take receipts, didn't have to account for exactly where the cash was flowing. They took $100, they did $100 worth of work. It was a viable business. Kesef Asham, this pasuk is very difficult, I'm not sure how to translate it. Kesef Asham v'chesef chatot, but the money of the Asham and the money of the chatot, lo yuva beit Hashem, l'kohanim yiyu. So the problem is, now all the money is going, the Kohanim are on strike, they're not taking the money directly, because they're being suspected. So therefore, they're not doing better to buy it with their money. So the money goes directly into this box, which is going out, and things are going nicely. But now the Kohanim don't have money to survive. They're supposed to get this money to help them live. You'd be able to go to the Kohen and say, I want to donate $100 to you so you could work nicely in the Beit HaMikdash. Buy yourself a pair of sandals, buy yourself a new cloak, buy yourself new whatever it is. The problem is there was no money, so they took the money from the Kesef Hashem, the Kesef Chatot. No problem is that's not their money. I'm not sure how to read this, because the Korban Kesef, a Korban Hashem and a Korban Chatot is an Olah. You don't get the money from that. The coin gets from, I believe a coin, I'm not sure. I apologize, I didn't do enough research for this class, so I'm going to leave it as, homework, do it on your own type of thing. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, in Olah, the coin all he gets is the skin of the animal, if I'm not mistaken. The coin gets the skin of an animal in Olah, everything else goes to Hashem. So the question is, how are they taking money? They don't have any money, so apparently they started dipping into the chatat into the Hashem, and I wonder if that's a little bit of a criticism against the Kohanim. That is, nobody is great here, but the Kohanim are taking a little bit on the nose. Which shouldn't surprise you from Yirmiyahu a little bit, but you won't be surprised to figure out who takes it on the nose when Ezra, the Kohen, tells the story. He has a slightly different view. There's no doubt that there's friction here, but the question is, who's more responsible for the friction? I believe that Yirmiyahu and Ezra, they received the Nevuah, or they read the Nevuah, but I think they're interpreting the Nevuah based on their own personal needs. Ezra's got us. There is no king in the time of Ezra. Tzemach David is long gone. Zerubbabel is dead. We don't know what happened. Zerubbabel comes back from Eretz Yisrael during the beginning of Sefer Ezra, which is 150 years before Ezra lived. Everybody's excited. They're calling him Tzemach, like Reishit Tzemach Latenu. By the time you're in Perek Zion in Ezra, and you're 150 years later, we have no idea what happened to Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel. He disappears from the face of the earth. Was he assassinated? Was he killed? Did he have no kids? Was he a loser? We have no idea. Zerubbabel disappears. There is no more kingship in the time of Ezra. The only people that you have left to run the country are the Kohanim. And that means that Ezra has a different need and requirement than does Yirmiyahu, who was essentially living in Galut. Well, he didn't go with the Kohen, but he knew that a guy named Yoyachin was living in Galut and would come back to Israel. And he did, in Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel comes back to Israel. Yirmiyahu believes that the kingship will continue and the Kohanim are the support staff. That's not true in the time of Ezra. In the time of Ezra, the Kahuna is alive and Malchut is dead. And therefore, they have a different set of requirements in a different way that they need to interpret the data to give chizuk to their shuls. There are different pulpit rabbis with different congregations who have different needs. Anyway, I want to finish this little piece, and then let's see if we have enough time for Divrei Yamin. Az Yaleh Chazael Melech Aram. And then, you remember Chazael, the one who murdered his boss because Yishayahu, because Elisha told him to? He comes and he makes war against Gat, which is down in Eretz Plishtim, which means he cut all the way through the country. Right? Syria's up here, and he goes all the way to Gat, which is down by Eretz Plishtim on the other side. So he must have done an end round conquering cities all the way through, and then he took a major city called Gat, and now he's ready for an attack on Yerushalayim. Vayasim Chazael Panav Lalot al Yerushalayim. Vayikach Yoash Melech Yudad Kolak Kodashim. So he takes all the holy stuff, Asher Tishu Yoshafat, which Yoshafat had made holy, all the treasure, Vyahoram Vaachazyahu Avotav, all of his father's money, Malchei Yudad Kodashav, Vekol HaZahav HaNimtzah Ba'otzrot Beit Hashem. He had to go into the...
They
didn't buy new ones after they had gotten stolen?
Yeah.
It's possible. It could also be... Now, the question is, why is he being punished? What did he do wrong? The word, Az Yaleh Chazael, after, therefore, Chazael, the question is, what did he do wrong? Could be the Bamot, but that's not really strong enough. It could be this Asham that was going on, that they took from the Asham. It could be the tension that existed between... But we never found... The king's not doing... The king is an okay guy here, top to bottom, except for the Bamot. We have no sense something's wrong. But that's weird also. All we had that hint is that after Yehoyada died, we're not sure what goes on. But you only have hints of what's going on with the Yehoash. You never really find out for sure. All you have is another hint that for whatever happened, Yehoash must have done something to bring on the enemies of his people. So he took all his money, Vayishlach Chazael Melech Aram, so he bought off Melech Aram, Vayal Mi'al Yushlayim, and the king says, good, and Chazael says, good, you pay me off enough money, I'm leaving. But yet the Divrei Yehoash, Shekol Asher Asah, Halohim Ktuvim, Al Sifrei Divrei Yamim, Malchei Yudah, they're written on the Book of Chronicles. That's not our Book of Chronicles, but their Book of Chronicles, which we no longer have. Vayakumu Avadav, his servants get up, Vayikshuru Kasher, and they have a mutiny. Vayaku, not a mutiny, it's a better word. They have a putsch, a coup.
An insurrection.
When people get together.
Cabal.
There's a fancy word when people.
Cabal.
Conspiracy. That's the best word. Vayakshu Kesha. Vayaku et Yoash Beit Milo Hayored Sila. So they killed him in the Beit Milo, which is going down to Sila, probably somewhere around, going down to the river on the other side of Harabai. The Yozachar ben Shimat, the Yozavav ben Shomer, the sons of Shimat and Shomer. Avadav hikiu vayamot. We never heard of these guys. They kill him. Vayikbridru oto imavtav yeradaviv vayamoch amatshi b'no tachtav. His son Amatshi takes over. We have no idea what the cause of the assassination is. It may have something to do with conditions that were going on in Chazael's time. When the going gets tough in war, people start saying, back in the day, today when things are going bad in war, so of course the same thing happened then today, which is that your approval ratings go down below 30%. So now what they do is they vote you out. Back then they voted you out more permanently. So maybe that was going on.
Maybe they were angry at the fact that he emptied out the treasury.
It's possible. We don't know. We simply, there's not enough information. So we have 12 minutes. Let's take a look, a quick run through Divrei HaYamim and all kinds of interesting things that happen. It is Chronicles 2, Divrei HaYamim 2, chapter 24, thank you. Chapter 24, verse 1. Even. Ben Sheva Shanim Yoash Malchov Arim Shamaf Yushlaim Hashem Yimot Tzivyam Ber Sheva. So far, so good. Same. Vayash Yoash Yashar Ben Hashem Kol Yimei Yehoyada HaKohen. He did right as long as Yehoyada was alive. It doesn't say Hu Asa Kol Yamav, which is what it says in Malachim. It says he did as good exactly as long as Yehoyada. So here it's much more clearly stated that it was only good as long as Yehoyada was alive. Vayisalo Yehoyada Nashim Shtayim, he married two wives. Vayoyi Banim Vanoni had sons and daughters, which is pretty standard. Vayhi Acharechein, it was after this. Haya Im Levi Yoash L'Chadesh Beit Hashem. He decided to improve Beit Hashem. This does not agree with Chazal's opinion that he was specifically fixing up what his mother had destroyed. This sounds like a standard maintenance job. I'm a frum guy. I got a Beit HaMikdash which is 150 years old. I would like, in fact, the word L'Chadesh makes it sound like he wanted to even improve the technology. What? Yeah, although leave in Tanakh time also means the thoughts. Like I had my mind was set on it, my heart was set on it. So you have to be careful. But the bottom line is he was into it, and it could be L'Chadesh's technology. Look, over 150 years, technology improves. Oh, we don't know. Right, so that's the problem. What is Vayhi Acharechein? I don't know. Maybe it was after he had boys and girls. We don't know. No, it can't be. Oh, yeah, Yehoyada is still alive. It must be after he took a wife and had some kids. Vayikbots Takoanim. I'm in chapter 24 of Two Chronicles. Two Chronicles. Make sure you're in Two Chronicles, not One Chronicle. Vayikbots Takoanim Valavim Vayomelem Tzula Rea Yehuda V'kibtsu Mikol Yisrael Kesef Chazek Beit Eloheichem. So here the marketing goes on the road. Go out on the road to Judah and Israel. Go up to the north. And go around and say, hey, would you like to make a donation to the temple? Mide shana v'shana v'atem timaharu l'davar v'lo miharu l'vim. Hurry up, hurry up. Go get money. And they just didn't. This is not people coming to you that gave you money and then you would redirect the better buy it. He turned the Levian force into a sales and marketing force. They hit the road. They weren't happy about knocking on the door and saying, hi, how you doing? You got $20? We'd like to build up the temple. Half of it's not even in your country because they were going to the north, which is kind of interesting. They were crossing over. But don't forget that at this time, you had Yehu in charge, and Yehu was kind of a friendly king. And once he destroyed Achav's house, so he was a reasonable guy, so there was probably some better relationships between the two countries. I'm sorry, what were you saying? Vayikra Melech Yehoyada HaRosh, so he calls the head Kohen. Vayomer lo madua lo darashta levim. How come you're not asking the levim to do the job? Levim Yudav Yushalayim Masaat Moshe Eved Hashem. This is Moshe himself's commandment that you are not asking levim to do. It's quite the criticism. That's like it's like a CEO bringing in a CFO asking why he's not asking his sales force to go and do the job. That's a shake in your pants type of situation. Vakal Yisrael Oalei Dut for the sake of the people, the nation. All for the sake of the old I do it, which means I want to rebuild the temple. Ki atalya hamirshat baner partsu et beit Hashem Elohim. I was wrong. This does agree with Chazal. Sorry. It's the exact opposite of what I said. The reason why I want to build it is because Atalya knocked down some stuff, her sons. So I was exactly wrong. Partsu et beit Elohim, v'gam kol kodshei beit Hashem asu l'balim. They took all the kodesh of beit Hashem and they turned it into Baal worship. It's all tummy. I won't use this stuff. I won't tovel it.
That's why he gave the Chazal.
What's that? Well, that was actually from the Ota locked away. But we can see it looks like they do build new Kalim here. Pasuk 8, Vayomer HaMelech Vayomer HaMelech Vayasu Aron Echad. So the king commands for them to make a Pushka. Vayitznu B'Shar Beit Hashem Chutzah. They put it outside of the Shar. Vayitznu Kol B'Yudav Yushlaim. They send out the word. Anybody wants to donate? Lavi L'Hashem Asat Moshe Eved Elokim Al Yitzrel Ben Bar. It wasn't a casual anybody who showed up would bring $5. There was an active marketing campaign to bring in the money and not to give it to the Kohanim. Obviously, he couldn't get the Kohanim motivated to hit the road, so he said, fine, I'll just send out mailings, like credit card mailings, and if you want to come in and drop some money. You know what? It was good. They liked it. They filled it up. They filled it up. I'm sorry, I'm reading it quickly because I just want to get through the basic story. Everybody saw how much money it was. A wonderful marketing campaign. Come and give $10 to the Beit HaMikdash. We'll build the best one you've ever seen, and people came. So again, he gets two people. That story is exactly as described. V'aru et Aaron, I think that means they shook it out. V'aru et Aaron, v'yisau v'yashivu el mekomo, and they put it back. Ko asu liyom biyom v'yasvu kesef larov. So they did every day. That's how much money was coming in. That it was a daily, they took it out, they shook out the money, they put it back, and they got more money the next day. Nice. V'yitnu ha-melech yoyada et osei melachaov. So the king takes the money. Sorry, the ha-melech v'yoda, the king and the coin both take the money, and they distribute it to the workers. Beit Hashem, v'yu sochrim chotzvim v'charashim, woodcutters, stonecutters, v'chadesh Beit Hashem, to renew the house of God. V'gam v'charashay barzel, and also to those who cut barzel is...
Iron.
Nechoshet is bronze and copper. It's iron. They cut iron. We're well into the Iron Age, by the way. We're already into the second phase of the Iron Age. Unechoshet and copper lechazek Beit Hashem. V'yasu osei ha-melacha v'tal ha-ruchah le-melacha. The work went on nice and long in their hands. V'yamidu et Beit Elohim al mitzknato v'yamtsu. They strengthened it. They put it back the way it was. They returned it to its original shape. They bring the extra cash that was left over because they did a beautiful job. It's all finished, and they have surplus. Go figure. Not your usual government job. They actually have a surplus. They made it to Kelim. I'm not sure what to do with this because this sort of disagrees. This is the first time we actually have sort of a disagreement between Sefer Malachim and Divrei Yamin. Klei sharei fa'alot v'chapot u'klei zahav v'chasev yu ma'alim olot Beit Hashem tamid kol yimei Yehoyada. As long as Yehoyada was around, they used these kelim. It could be the kelim that were mentioned in Sefer Malachim were not these day-to-day kelim. Maybe there were some other fancier equipment. I don't know. It doesn't say Chatzot's Road here. It's specifically the kelim that were usable by the Kohanim in order to do the service. I thought it said the velo asu et hasipot. So there were some things they didn't make, but it could be that they was different kalim than the ones that we have here.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But anyway, I'm going to read on just because I want to get through the punchline. We have a lot of psukim, or I show you how the real significant difference. Vayiskanyo yada vayisbayamot vayamot. Vayisbayamot. So he got old, good old guy, and he died. Ben Meo Shloshim Shana B'moto. So you all know about the fact that Moshe was the longest living person, 120 years old. They teach you that in grade schools, but they don't read Divrei Yamin. So Yehoyada made it to 130. Vayikbaru Beir David Im Amalachim Ki Asat Tova B'Yisrael Im HaElohim Uveito. This is Ezra talking. You know, usually they call him, it sounds like he's the king here, right? They buried him in the city of David. He sounds mashish, he's like a king, which shouldn't surprise you, because in fact, probably for the first 10 years or 5 years of the life, he was the king de facto. What do they call that? The person who really rules in place of the monarch when the monarchs are young?
Regent,
I guess, okay. V'acharei mot Yoyada bau sarei Yehuda v'yishtachavu l'melech. After Yoyada dies, all the princes come and they all bow down to the king. We're about to have a case of hubris. Az shama ha-melech aleihem, and the king heard them, what they said. Now, it never says, it may say what they said, but the idea is they're telling him, you're the man, you're all wonderful, you should be doing this and that and the other thing. Whatever they were telling him, he listened to them, and apparently it wasn't too good. Vayazvu et Beit Hashem Elohei Avotehem. And then they forgot about the temple. See, up to now, it sounds like it's the king that wants to rebuild the temple, and Yehoyada may actually be slowing things down, but now it's the opposite. As soon as Yehoyada is dead, he forgets all about the temple. Vayavdu et Asherim v'tatzepim. And he worships idols.
He or they?
B'nai Yisrael.
Yeah.
Oh. But it doesn't include the king?
The Nisim.
All right. Okay. V'yavdu et ha'ashim v'atzabim v'yihi ketzef al Yehuda v'Yerushalayim b'ashmatam zonim. Because of the sin that they worshipped Asherot, which is not necessarily the goddess. It might just be the trees. And atzabim, atzabei ketzef zahav. We have that in Hallel. It's the idols that are made out of silver and gold. So God sends Nevi'im to return them to God, to make them do tshuva. And they give them edut. If you don't do this, this is what's going to happen. But they did not listen. So the son of dead Yehoyada comes, his name is Zechariah. And he comes around, he says, Vayamor me'al ha'am. He stands in front of the people. Vayomer lahem. He says to the people, Ko amar Elohim, this is what God says. Lama tem ovrim mitzvot Hashem. Why are you not doing God's commandments? You're doing Averis. Lo tatzlichu. You will not be successful. Ki azavtem et Hashem v'yazov etchem. You leave him, he leaves you. Vayikshuru alav, vayigrimu evan b'mitzvat hamelech. So they have a little conspiracy against this Navi priest, the son of Yoyada, and based on the command of the king, they stone him until he is dead. Oh, they may have had some excuse. He's rebelling against the king. He's saying things that are not allowed, Morid b'malchut. But the bottom line is the king decides that he's going to die and the people support him. B'chatzar Beit Hashem. That's a sin. now we got a reason for Hazael to come. Now we got problems for, now we got cause for assassination. Now it's starting to fill in. Now why does Yirmiyahu not want to tell us this? Maybe he feels, so according to Dada Mikra, it was because Yirmiyahu knew that it was such a common story that he didn't feel he had to repeat it. Okay. Another possibility is Yirmiyahu was trying to protect the Malkuts. And his job is to protect the Malkut and show that the Malkut was a good servant to God. And just because Yoash had the last 10 years of his life were pretty stinky, the first 30 years of his life were pretty good, and he'd rather focus on that than the other thing. That's Yirmiyahu's right, especially if God has told them, I need you to reinforce the kingship so they get to come back from Babel and restart the country. I can't justify what's going on, but there's clearly suppressed information here in Sefer Melachim. He hints at it, that he does. He hints at the Yoyada thing, he hints at the fact that Hazael came for some punishment but never tells the punishment. There are hints, but there's no direct statement like this. Here Ezra says, listen, there is no Malchut now. I'm going to tell you exactly how it was. And how it was that he had this Navi stoned to death, and that's why he paid the price that he paid. You want to say something?
I was just going to say that that's what you told us from the beginning. There are going to be Chronicles are there to tell you what actually happened from a historical point of view, but that the prophet is going to have another reason to write this.
Right, but the one thing that it's careful not to confuse is the chronicles that they were talking about in Malachim. It was written on the chronicles of kingdoms of Judah.
No,
are not these right? These are different chronicles. It's true; these sometimes are more historical. But even Ezra will skip over it. We saw it was with earlier kings that Ezra was skipping information that Yirmiyahu was playing up. It's called historiography. There's no such thing as a history. Historiography means I decide how I want to graph or write history. Everybody has his own agenda, and everybody very possibly inspired by God. My agenda is inspired by God, and then the job of the Navi is how best to implement that prophecy. Because it's clear that Ezra's not having this prophecy. Ezra's drawing on older material. This is 300 years after Ezra and 200 years after Yirmiyahu. The best they could do is look at the older prophet's material and try to figure out, and they get Nebuah that says, I want you to write a certain type of book. They've got to decide how to play that book, and each one is going to choose history which serves their goal, and the goals are very, very different. What?
Do you think he's drawing off the Divrei Hayamim that they're talking about there? Like, while
I,
it's in circulation?
There must be something in circulation, otherwise how could, you know,
right.
I don't think it was Nebuah. He must have, and I doubt he got Nebuah about these
right.
things. These sound like actual archives. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Nebuah is not, you know, when it says that her mother was Sivya, that's not Nebuah.
Yeah.
That's God saying, I want you to talk about the king in such a way, and then his job is to go to the library and check out the whatever books or chronicles he needs and to write a sefer, and that's an important idea. It's different in the Torah. The Torah, word for word, is Nevuah, but when it comes to Nevi'im, especially Nevi'im that are writing 100 years after their time. Now, if you're reading Sefer Shmuel, the first half of it, which is written by Shmuel, there's a lot of stuff which is direct Nevuah, as if Shmuel's writing it as it's taking place. But when you're talking about two books which were written either 150 years or 250 years after the events that took place, that's a different animal. It's a different animal altogether. Doesn't mean they're less holy. It just means that they're using secondary sources more to satisfy their prophecy. Okay. Anyway, I'll continue on. 22. V'lo sachar yoyash melech ha-chesed asher asa yoyada aviv imo. He did not remember the loving kindness that Yehoyada's family did for him. He killed his son, Uchamoto, Amar, and as he dies, he says, Yera Adonai v'yedrosh, let God see and let God
redress?
That's a good way of going. Investigate, really, is l'drosh, let God come. That's essentially a die. That's your guy getting killed for the wrong reasons, and the curse, you know, giving that last, not so much a curse, but a promise, you know, the last thing he says is, Yera Adonai v'yedrosh, which I'm sure shook up quite a few people.
May God see this and demand redress.
Demand redress. By the way, that word drash, as we've noticed in Divrei Yamim, it's all over Divrei Yamim. How come you didn't go to Lidrosh Hashem? How come you, Kohen, didn't go to Lidrosh the Levium to see they were doing the job? The word darash itself is, you know, to write a book on it, essentially. By